A storm is coming, or a storm is right now. Nobody can live without a storm that's going to batter you about and nearly destroy you. In the physical world, we see these kind of storms all the time, the Katrinas, the tsunamis. And the Bible gives a holistic picture as to why bad things do happen on the earth. Doesn't make everything ironclad and fully understandable, but in the grand narrative of the Bible, we see that in a broken world, storms happen that God doesn't want to have happen, and yet even out of a storm, God can still be in control and actually can restore and redeem out of the storm. We see those storms throughout the Bible, and we also see the storm in the Bible that is needed, the storm of moisture, the storm of rain, that without rain, without water, we can't grow. In those two storms, there is the need to wait. We wait. We wait to endure the storm. We wait for the storm to come. Throughout the Bible, there is this phrase, waiting on God, waiting on the Lord. And this is such a strange and odd phrase. What does that mean to wait on God? What does it mean to wait on the Lord? What does it mean to live in the midst of a storm or to want a storm? That's what we're looking at today. Book of Isaiah chapter 40 says this. Do you not know? Have you not heard that the Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth? He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary. And young men stumble and fall, but those who wait in the Lord will renew their strength. Hey, haven't you heard? God has created all, God is in all, and even the strongest among us, the youngest, most testosterone-laden males, you any longer, not me any longer, but you, will get weary. Every single person will get weary. It is a fact of life. And yet, those who are strong, have a strength that surpasses understanding, wait on God. Have wait in the Lord. We don't know anything about waiting. Waiting is against our national heritage. It's out of our national fabric. We looked at week one about having a vision. If you want to grow, you have to have a vision for a plot of land. Just like a farmer sees a plot of land and says, I see corn there, or I see strawberries there, or I see perennials there. You and I must have a vision for our life, a vision for what we want to grow into being. And in week two, we looked at strategically planting seeds. Whatever you want to have happen in your life, you have to do something ahead of time that hopefully later on will come to fruition. We need to plant seeds. And then finally, we need to see and observe how God will actually prune, as was talked about last week, prune and take things away, even good things. Not just bad things, but good things so that we can grow. And all of these things can happen, and yet, unless water comes, nothing will grow. Unless the storm comes, nothing is going to grow. It will not happen. Saw a movie recently, Food, Inc. Anybody see that movie, Food, Inc.? No? Interesting movie. Read a book a while ago called Omnivore's Dilemma. These media tend to strike fear, maybe a proper fear, maybe just overhyped fear. But nonetheless, it's interesting how the food industry, the food corporations, have totally detached us from the way that things naturally grow. When you and I want anything to eat, we simply go to a shelf and pluck it off. We become detached to the cycles and rhythms of how food is prepared. And in these works, they take a look at the impact of genetically altered seed and pesticides and mass-producing thing and actually jamming corn inside of cattle, which cattle don't normally have corn, but just how that is affecting our food chain. And that's just kind of interesting reading. And the fact is, I can go inside any grocery store, Biggs, Kroger, Sam's Club, and I can get any fruit I want right now without having worked at all. I don't have to wait at all. I go in and I get it now. It doesn't matter what time of year it is. I will find somebody who grew a tomato somewhere in the continental U.S. and it could be shipped to me and I can enjoy a tomato without ever waiting for a tomato to grow. I can have a strawberry right now. At any moment during the year, I can have a strawberry without ever having waiting for the natural strawberry season here in the Midwest. I never wait for any fruit, and you probably don't either. And then what happens is, since this is the way it's happening in the physical world, we translate this to the spiritual world, and we just assume that I should never wait for anything. God should just give me everything right now. Anything I want to grow, and it should happen right now. And we forget that we have to wait. Not only do we have to wait for rain to come, as the farmer has to wait, but we also have to wait to endure destructive storms. You remember a number of years ago they had the biosphere? Maybe they still have the biosphere. I'm not sure, but some scientists said, looks like the Earth is devolving pretty quickly. We ought to create a perfect environment where we can study what it would be like to not have the effects of pollution or the effects of depletion of the ozone or anything that scientists debate and talk about. So they built this biosphere, and it was supposed to be the perfect place to live. What they found, though, was that the trees weren't growing, and they were bent over, and they were wilting. The reason? Because they didn't account in the biosphere for wind. And they found out that wind is necessary for a strong tree to grow. When we're in the midst of wind, when we're in the midst of a storm, we don't like it. We think something is going wrong, but oftentimes it is an endurance mechanism. It is a growth mechanism that God is throwing our way. And if we don't have seasons of storm, seasons of resistance, seasons where we're forced to do nothing but simply be resilient and survive, we won't grow. We won't go to a new place. We don't want to wait for a storm. We don't want to wait for our food. We want whatever we want right now without waiting. Our culture doesn't value waiting at all. When I go to Kroger, I don't like to wait in line. Are you as sick as I am when you go? And if you go to any store, I don't do all that much shopping. Libby does most of the shopping. I'm very thankful for that. But when I do go shopping, I'm very, very anal about getting in the right line. And you just wait, you know, you go and you view. Let's say there's four lines open, and you try to figure out which line do I want to get in. And you do a real quick calculus equation in your mind. It's about the highest mathematical equation I've ever been able to do. I try to do a quick scan of how many people are standing in line. I do a quick scan of how many items they actually have inside of their basket. And then I do a quick scan of how many people in that line look like they're the kind of check-writing losers that frustrate me. Am I right? I mean, come on. Come on. I want everyone to pay cash or credit card. I don't want any like long signatures. I need a manager checking out too. It totally messes me up. So I'm trying to make sure that I'm in a place where I don't have to wait in line. After I get my food that I haven't grown and I haven't waited for at all, and I take it home to cook, I can't wait the several minutes for the pot to boil the water. So I need to actually put it in the microwave because I can't wait that long. So I put it in the microwave and I can't even wait the 2 minutes. I got to stop the microwave at a minute 58 because those last 2 seconds just are not coming quick enough. I need it fast. I need it now. I can't even wait to have jeans that have naturally worn holes in them. I have to get jeans that are hand-me-downs from my son that are all pre-drilled. When's the last time any of us had actually cool jeans because we waited and actually wore them out like the old days with tough skins when your knees would wear out before the fabric would? What is it that we wait for at all in our life? And yet when it comes to God, we want him to do it right now, give it to us right now. And if I'm not getting it right now, then something is wrong. Now what's wrong is you're in my expectations. What's wrong is thinking that we can strong-arm everything. What's wrong is devaluing the process of growth. In the book of James, chapter 5, New Testament portion of the Bible, it says this: "Be patient then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains? You too be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near." The farmer waits. The buyer of produce doesn't wait, but the farmer who grows it waits. And why does he wait? Because he wants a valuable crop. You ever realize that anything of value in your life came as a result of waiting? Anything that has ultimate lasting value. It took a long time. Anything. You want a great meal, you're probably going to have to wait versus go through a drive-through line. You want a great person to marry, you're probably going to have to wait instead of taking the first one that comes along. You want a great job, you're probably going to have to wait and get the proper education. You want a diamond? Well, if you have a diamond, it's because somebody waited over years and years and years and years and years while the compression force caused a shiny object, and a diamond cutter spent time cutting that diamond. Everything of value comes from waiting. And so what it means to wait on God, to wait on the Lord, means that God is sort of the X factor in the equation, that he has resources that I don't have. He has understandings that I don't have. He has an eternal perspective that I'm not prone to have. I tend to have a perspective for 24 hours. He's doing things over the midst of eternity. He has ways that are not my ways. The Bible says that his ways are not my ways. That he's got a different set of understanding of how to bring things about. So when I wait on God, I am trying to have all that he wants from my life in his timing, and realizing I don't understand it all, yet I'm trusting that he does, because he will not grow weary. He will not grow faint. Waiting on the Lord includes being patient in attitude. I need to be patient. I need to wait. I don't like to wait. You know, when I wait, it's always because something is wrong. Ever thought about that? In our society, when we wait, it's because something is wrong. When I'm standing in a line, I'm left with one of three options. Number one, I'm realizing that I must not be important. If I'm in line, what's wrong is I'm not important. I went over to India last week. And, you know, when I travel, I'm never buying a first-class ticket, and I don't fly enough to get upgraded. So what that means is I wait with all the cattle peons in those little lines, you know, that go back and forth like this, while people who are important, who have money, or who do a lot of traveling, so they're important, they don't have any wait at all. They've got the first-class line, because if I wait, I must not be important, or I wait because somebody didn't plan well enough. Somebody doesn't understand that you should have hired more people, called more people in to have all of these cash registers open. I go and I wait in a buffet line where a caterer has set up food, and I keep thinking to myself, why are we not going down both sides of the table? This is crazy. Who sets it up this way? Can't you people learn? Why are we only going down one side of the table? Somebody hasn't planned well enough. We should be going down both sides of the table. Or finally, I wait because there's limited resources. I wait because there's only so many concert tickets, and there has to be a forced bottleneck to make sure that the finite amount of resources get out and there's not an overcommitting of resources. And so what am I left to conclude? When I hear about waiting on God, unless I have a holistic picture of all that's happening in the Bible and eternity, I'm left to think, number one, I must not be important, God. Other people are more important to you than myself. That's why I'm waiting. That's why I don't have what I want. I'm not important. Or two, you really haven't planned very well. You're just not that smart. You're not that involved. You're not that engaged with my world or the world. Or three, you have limited resources. You really can't meet my needs and everybody else's needs. This is because of my cultural understanding of waiting. Or when else do I wait? I wait when I'm taking a walk with somebody and they're just slow. I'm going, come on, let's go. They're slow because I'm faster. They have shorter legs, or they're stupider. Is that a word, stupider? I guess if you said stupider, then you're pretty stupid. So they're, you know, I'm like, come on. So what does that mean? Does that mean that I'm always out ahead of God, kind of wooing him to come along? See, what this means is ultimately I have a patience problem. When I view waiting as something is wrong, it's I have a patience problem. And unless we overcome this, and we value patience, we begin to wait, we'll not get what only God can give us. God's growth plan takes time. James Garfield is the president of the United States, and before that he was the president of a college. And right at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, there was a large benefactor of the college who had a son, and he came to Garfield and said, 4 years in college is a long time. Isn't there some way we can speed this up? Because the business world is waiting. We wanted to leverage the Industrial Revolution, the beginning of it, as best they could. And Garfield said, if you want a squash, I can give you that in 4 months. If you want an oak tree, it's going to be 4 years, or 40 years, or 400 years. If we want the kind of life that comes with quick, immediate, I don't wait for it, then we can have soft, fibrous tissue as a life. But if we want deep-rooted, ever tall and expanding, wide branches, that kind of growth, it's going to be slow, and we're going to have to wait. We're going to have to wait on God to do what only He can do. We're going to have to trust that He has a bigger eye towards the future and our future than we can have on our own. The book of Psalms chapter 37, verse 7 to 9, it says this: Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Refrain from anger, turn from wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil. For those who are evil will be destroyed, but those who wait on the Lord will inherit the land. This touches on another tension point with waiting, because if you have any eyes to what's happening around, there's all kinds of people who aren't waiting on God at all, not valuing God at all, and they're getting everything. They're getting all kinds of money. They're getting all kinds of attachments. They're getting all kinds of perks. They're not waiting. They're getting it all. And yet, when you take a growth posture and you say, God, You're most important. I'm trying to grow to be the person You want me to be. You'll see people blow past you. And you'll say, God, why is this? And this is one of the common themes throughout the Bible of why do the wicked prosper? Why, coming back from India, are wicked people who are pimping out little girls prospering? Why? I kept trying to deal with the storm that I was seeing with my own eyes. Deal with this storm, at the same time trying to wait for answers from God as terms of what we should do. What is our role in a larger way? In India, parents out in the farmland regions will be hurting financially, having a hard time feeding their family, feeding their girls. And just like during the Depression here in the United States, people were giving away their children or hoping they could find someplace to feed themselves. We did that here in America. Well, out there, it's not just that it's hard and having a hard time putting food in mouths, but for a girl, you've got a pending debt waiting of a dowry to pay. A dowry to pay in which you see no way to pay that dowry. And so when a distant family member comes up and says, hey, I'll take your daughter to the city and we'll get her a stewardess job, you're prone to think positively and hope that that happens. And the little girl is taken away and she's given to a pimp and the wicked prosper on her back. So I met girls who have, in brothels, having 100 to 250 sex acts performed a month for years. And I sit here and think, God, this is a storm. This is an awful storm that's blowing here. Why is this? How can You allow this to happen? And I'm trying to figure out how awful, devastating storms like this happen at the same time, trying to wait and say, God, what am I to do? What more, is there anything more this thing called Crossroads should do? We have in our budget this year, above and beyond what we already have been giving, $217,000 in additional to help with aftercare. In fact, as I talk about that, when you go home today, you can go to crossroads.net. We actually have a financial discussion with some of our senior leaders about this year's fiscal budget, what's going on financially, what our financial principles are, all that kind of stuff. And encourage you to go download that, listen to that. Some really good stuff in there. Actually, speaking of that, in a moment, we're going to take up an offering, too. That's a good offering setup, isn't it? If you're newer here today, no worries. Just let it pass you by. But for those around you, this is one of the ways that we wait on God and we fund things that are happening that are closest to God's heart. So in a moment, we'll have some volunteers that are coming down to do that. But I'm waiting and wondering, God, what is the answer here? What is to happen here? I need to be patient. And I'm in a waiting posture for a lot of things in my life. I'm in a waiting posture, waiting for God to teach somebody something that's really frustrating me. Don't you have that kind of thing? People in your life who are close to you that are just, you don't think going the right way, and you're waiting for God to just teach them. Give them a lesson, God. Just, you know, give. Maybe you and I are wrong about our perceptions, or maybe it's we're waiting on God to do something in that area. I'm waiting. I have a patient attitude to see our city continue to change, to see our city continue to morph to being the kind of city that Jesus would smile upon. And actually, I think he's starting to smile upon this. I saw this in the last Sunday's Inquirer. I don't mean to make any political statement. In fact, Crossroads is a political-free zone. If you saw any annoying people with political things outside, it has nothing to do with us. They're on public property. We can do nothing about it. And then if any of those people put anything in your windshield wipers, know that we didn't endorse that at all. Those are annoying loser people who should not be doing what they're doing. In fact, maybe some of you are in here sneaking here right now. And good to have you in here, but not in our parking lots. So we're a political-free zone. We want to kind of escape politics and kind of zoning on God while we're here. So I don't mean this to speak to anything politically, but I do find it fascinating this last Sunday's Inquirer on the front page, measuring city's progress. And I think we also have ushers can come down at any point here too. Measuring city's progress. And it quotes Mayor Mallory as saying this. When prior to now have you seen bumper stickers on people's cars that say, "I love Cincinnati," he asks. That to me is real. Isn't that cool? I mean, it's true. There's "I Love Cincinnati" stickers popping up all over the place. I believe if you're a follower of Jesus, you should love the city that you're in, and you should work to see it operate even better. And you see these things. I don't know if he has any idea that Crossroads is behind that or not. But I'll tell you what, we've been waiting, and not just waiting, doing. One of those bumper stickers I hate those bumper stickers that say things like, "Just let go and let God." No. Wait on God. That's not necessarily letting go and letting God. Letting go means I do nothing. I wash my hands of all responsibility. When you wait on God, you do have a patient attitude, but you also persevere in your actions. Waiting on God means you regularly do the right things and you go forward and you just trust there's going to be fruit. That's why we have in your program exercises throughout this whole series. Things you can do at home, because if you want to grow with God and you think you don't have to read a Bible or you don't have to pray, you will not grow with God. You will cap out. If you want to get ahead financially, you will probably have to get an education. You will probably have to persevere in actions and calling on accounts you think that they're not going to respond. If you want God to grow things in your life, we have to be diligent. One of the ways this is talked about in the book of Habakkuk in the Old Testament talks about the watchman going up to the rampart and waiting and watching. You know, no sentry looks around and says, "Well, nothing's happened, I guess I'm going to leave." No, the sentry needs to stand his post and be diligent. And if we want to grow, we have to stand our post and be diligent. Just so you see, this is not like an isolated thing in the Bible, wait on God, endure storms. This is throughout the entire Bible. And even though we don't have a full understanding of why God allows some devastating storms to happen and why he doesn't do more or call his people to do more in coming against it, it never surprises God. It's seen throughout the entire Bible. And Jesus talked about it too. He said it this way in the book of Matthew chapter 7. "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man or woman who built his or her house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash." Jesus is talking here about storms. Jesus says there will be storms. It does happen. Jesus went straight into a storm himself that wiped him out. Jesus experienced storms. He says storms will happen. And he says there's two kind of ways to deal with storms: having your eyes wide open and having diligent actions, or having your eyes shut and doing stupid things. He said you can do it one of two ways. You cannot persevere in building your life by just building it on sand. just build it on sand. Or you could persevere and do the hard work of finding rock or digging through the dirt to find rock. You know what's amazing is we're so shocked when a tropical storm comes up and wipes out houses that are all along the coastline. We're so shocked. Hey, there's sand there for a reason. It's because stuff gets beaten there all the time. Hey, don't build your house on the water line. Don't build your houses weren't meant to be built there. If you want to build your house, that's fine, but don't be upset when it gets wiped out. You will get wiped out if you build your house in the wrong place. And yet for us in our lives, we think that we don't have to receive any counsel. We feel like we can do whatever we want. We can buy anything we want. We can sex anything we want. We can save anything we want. We can ingest anything we want. We can value anything we want. We can do anything we want. And then a storm comes and wipes us away. And we're going, oh, what happened? What happened? I can't believe it. Yes, you built your life in a place it shouldn't be. And now you're going to blame God? No. Jesus says the wise person hears God's words, and takes the time to know where to build their life, builds down on rock, because the storm is going to come for everybody. Whether you do everything right in your life or whether you do nothing right in your life, none of us are immune from the storm. Cancer will come. Divorce will come. No marriage will come. Loss, death of a loved one will come. Collapse of a market and 50% or 100% of our wealth will come. Spots on our skin will come. None of us are immune to it. Every single one of us are going to have numerous storms. But those that endure are those that will wait on the Lord, that will do the diligent things over time and trust in God's protection and trust in God's redeeming power. We have a group of people in our church that are continually wrestling with infertility, and we're seeing an amazing thing happening with people who were told that you could never have a baby or starting to pop babies left and right. And, you know, in our society, like, if we want to have a baby, you know, and 7 weeks have gone by, we're going, what is the deal here? Come on, how come I don't have a baby here right now? I'm going to go right now to the infertility guy and have him do all that kind of stuff. There's nothing wrong with the infertility docs or using our creativity to use our creativity in science. There's nothing wrong with that. But what is wrong is we can't wait for anything. And oftentimes what we're finding is some people are in these community groups and dealing with infertility. What they're finding is there's a moment of waiting where God is trying to teach them a lesson. And until they learn the lesson, they're not ready to have a child. I know that sounds wild. That sounds weird. But we have women now who could line up and tell that story. Because if we get everything we want right now, we're going to lose the opportunity for God to teach us things that we won't be receptive to learn while we're in the need of want, while we're in the need of needing something. So sometimes we wait on God because he needs to push the pause button and frustrate us, because there's unique lessons, unique learnings, and unique moments of grace for us to experience while we're waiting and not getting what we need. Sometimes we wait because we're not prepared, and God knows that we're not prepared. Shoot, I thought that I should be doing a job like mine, like I have right now when I was 22. No, I couldn't do what I was doing right now at 22. I couldn't do what I was doing right now at 30. I couldn't do what I was doing right now at 37. I couldn't. I wanted everything then, but I couldn't. I needed to wait as God allows me to see things and comprehend things and have the strength for things that I didn't have before. There's things in my family. There's things with people who are very close to me. I am waiting on God because I can't manipulate things. I do try to manipulate things very frequently. But I do find when I do manipulate those things, it backfires on me and people become rebellious and they don't listen and receive. And so what that means, sometimes waiting on God means I don't take the problem into my own lap and I wait and trust that God is going to do something in that person's life to help them see reality and help their heart grow warm. This is what waiting on God means. Just like the farmer with a valuable crop has to wait for the rain. You can't manufacture the rain, even though we can manufacture a dam a couple states away. Ultimately, we can't manufacture the rain, and I can't manufacture whatever grace God is going to give me right now. I have to wait on the person the person of God. And when I realize that God is actually for me, it makes a difference. Over in India, I was struck again with how all gods are not the same, and how there's some destructive spiritualities in India. One of the high gods is the god Kali. And you can find her on the web if you look at her. She is depicted as having human skulls in a necklace around her neck and blood coming out of her mouth. And Kali indiscriminately devours people. In fact, Mother Teresa in Calcutta, her home of the destitute and dying, boy, that's an encouraging name, isn't it? The home of the destitute and dying was given by the Indian government. They allowed her to bolt that on to the high temple for the goddess Kali, who apparently her toe resides there. Kali kind of came down and dispersed all over the land, and her toe is there apparently. It's a big black rock, and people worship that thing. And with Kali, she just indiscriminately devours without any rhyme or reason. In fact, many spiritualities are like this. There's no rhyme or reason. The Greek gods are doing their thing up there, and we just receive the carnage. This actually is one of the theories as to why the Indian culture, while senior levels of the Indian culture are growing in the technological world, 95% of the culture is just in ruins. And one of the theories is because when your spirituality, your belief is that there isn't an order to the universe, when there isn't a reasonable plan to the universe, when there isn't a God who is doing something and bringing forgiveness and redemption, why should you do anything to get yourself ahead or the culture ahead? Because the gods are just going to devour you anyway. This is a God, my God, right here in the Bible, is a God who I can wait for, a God who knows my name, a God who, it says, has every hairs of my head counted, a God who understands what my future is going to be, understands what my past is going to be, is a God who wants the best for me, even when storms are hitting me in the face, and I think in the moment, he wants the worst for me. Jeremiah 14:22 says, do any of the worthless idols of the nation bring rain? Do the skies themselves send down showers? No. It is you, Lord our God. Therefore, our hope is in you, for you are the one who does all this. The Bible also says that every good and perfect gift comes from God. I wait on God. Why do I wait on God? Because I wait on God because I've seen what he's done in my life and other lives. When I wait on God because I know when I go through moments of dryness and having every kind of doubt that I thought that I'd gotten over years ago, I know the rain will come. I wait on God because I've seen people come through heartaches I thought never could happen. I wait on God, and you should wait on God, because what you're encountering right now has been encountered before. It has been seen before. And there is a God who will give you grace to endure. And there is a God who will give you grace, sent like rain, to moisten your fertile, dry soul. God, I'm praying with all the plots of land in here, the plots of ground, you would give us added perspective to wait. Give us trust that you will have your way. God, some of us are in your storm. Some of us are waiting for the storm. But I choose to wait on you.